I'd like to introduce our next speaker. As you notice, one of the themes that we tried to follow in putting this session together was kind of the overall risk management story. We'll have a speaker later on talking about price risk. Joe talked about the outlook and situation for our safety net coming forward, and it looks like it's going to lean a little more heavily towards crop insurance. Does anybody that's had any type of insurance claim ever that they needed to file, a lot of times the coverage that you think you got is not exactly what the insurance company thinks you got or the underwriters think you got. So this morning, I'd like to introduce Mr. Grant Ballard. Grant's an attorney with Banks Law Firm. He's a native of Central Arkansas. He has done some work. You might have seen some of the work that he's done with the National Ag Law Center. He got an undergraduate degree in agribusiness at the University of Arkansas and his law degree from the University of Arkansas, and is a practitioner in the area. He's litigated cases and arbitrated and gone to arbitration with cases for producers with crop insurance claims. So if it's okay, Grant, if you want to go ahead, we sure appreciate you being here.
Well, like Larry said, I'm Grant Ballard. I represent producers. I represent good people who have crop insurance claims denied. I think it's important that we have this discussion now, the discussion of what happens when the insurance company or RMA decide they're not going to pay your claim. We talk about crop insurance as a risk management tool, but my clients aren't crop insurance farmers. My clients are good people who, for reasons outside of their control, end up waiting on money that they don't ever get, or waiting on money that they don't get in a timely fashion, and waiting on money that their bankers want. So today, I'm going to go over just a basic outline of crop insurance and how the administration of crop insurance works, and some common areas of concern for producers. Like I say, I represent producers. I've never represented an insurance company, so I've got a horse in the race. And I'll just go ahead right now and I'll do a little disclaimer and say that there are a lot of really good people working for crop insurance companies. There are a lot of great crop insurance agents and some great people in RMA. But I get the phone call when a farmer says, if I don't get this claim, I'm not going to be farming next year. So I talk to people when they are not satisfied with crop insurance. And I talk to people often enough, I generate enough phone calls that I can see some trends. I see trends, places where there are problems with our federal crop insurance program. And I've been through the dispute resolution process, which most attorneys have not. So I think I can provide a little bit of insight into how a crop insurance dispute evolves and how it is resolved. Crop insurance is different. The dispute resolution process is often confusing. And if you've got any questions as I go through this presentation, stop me. Just shout out at me. I'll entertain those at any time. First off, you know, it's obvious that crop insurance isn't your standard insurance arrangement. It's not your two-party insurance contract between ProAg and a producer. You've got RMA there, USDA Risk Management Agency. They're heavily involved in the administration of crop insurance in this country. And a lot of people think that RMA kind of stands in the background. Well, they don't always stand in the background. They can get involved in your individual claim. They will show up at your farm shop if you're a producer on occasions, usually with large claims. And this makes the process much more complicated and much more difficult. As we talk about dispute resolution, what happens when your claim is denied? What happens when it's delayed? There's not always a standard answer. There's not one answer. It depends on who makes the decision to hold up a claim. It depends on the facts surrounding your claim. And in the past, it wasn't so many years ago in this country that if a crop insurance company said, I'm not paying, you could go into your county circuit court in Mississippi, Arkansas, and you could sue the company because you had a contract. You could sue on that company. Well, that's changed. Most of the time now, you have to go to arbitration with a company. It wasn't so long ago in this country that if your crop insurance agent misled you or made a misrepresentation that led to your claim being denied, that the companies or RMA would step up and they would share some of that responsibility. That's not the case now. So that's why this important is, this conversation is important, is because things are changing. And I'm not going to tell you, I don't know why they're changing in the direction they are. I haven't been involved in these changes, but the rules are changing. But as somebody who actively represents producers across the South, represented in arbitration, federal court litigation, from Texas to Virginia, RMA appeals, USDA National Appeals Division appeals, it's not people like me that are recommending these changes in the dispute resolution process. And it's becoming more difficult for producers to assert their rights. Now, we've already stated that RMA is heavily involved in the crop insurance program. And you all probably know that policies are sold through the AIPs, the approved insurance providers. What is often not clear to a lot of people is that RMA has a horse in this race as well. Because Risk Management Agency reinsures a certain percentage of losses by the insurance companies. And that creates an interesting arrangement, in my opinion, because you've got a federal agency that's making the rules, so to speak, a large degree of the rules on how this works. And they've got their own budget, and they've got their own money at risk, just like the insurance companies do. So some people think that's a conflict of interest, but that's probably me being paranoid. This is the best I can do. I'm not very technologically savvy on an outline of how crop insurance in this country is structured. At the bottom, you have the producer. And there's a contract between the producer and the insurance company. The terms of that contract are your policy provisions. And at the top of the ladder, you've got USDA, Risk Management Agency. Now, the contract between USDA RMA and the insurance provider is called the Standard Reinsurance Agreement. And what's interesting about this arrangement, it's a three-party system, but the producer really has no contract with RMA, and RMA has no real contract with the producer. The producer agrees to abide by RMA guidelines or abide to their application, but the producer doesn't get a copy of all those handbooks. The producer is often unaware of RMA's involvement until RMA comes to that operation. So what are the rules? I reference the rules. It's not so simple to say. The most simple part is the basic provisions that are standard across this country. But we insure currently over 100 different crops, and those crops have crop-specific provisions. And then, as a lot of you know, you've got county-specific provisions of insurance. There's basically 3 to 4 layers of insurance. And then you've got the RMA handbooks, which are about as lengthy as the IRS tax code. The handbooks aren't law, but that is Risk Management Agency's interpretation of the law. That's Risk Management Agency's take on how crop insurance should be operated in this country, and most importantly, how losses should be adjusted. So the rules in the handbooks are important, even though they're not law, and a producer will probably never be sent a copy of the handbook. You have to access those online. Another, we've already mentioned the Standard Reinsurance Agreement. It must be mentioned again because the Standard Reinsurance Agreement limits some of the things a crop insurance company can do. But again, the producer who has the policy, you're not a party to that contract. So you really don't know, aren't informed what's going on. And in conclusion, on this point, I would just say that it's impossible for producers to know all the rules involving crop insurance. I keep a copy of the basic provisions in my desk drawer, and I pull them out at least once a week, and that's just 40-some-odd pages, the 2011 basic provisions. Crop insurance is complex, and minor mistakes cost people money. I'll tell you, I would hate to take a guess at the hundreds of millions of dollars that have been lost by producers this year just by doing inaccurate paperwork, just because an acreage report wasn't filled out correctly. Producers need to be aware that the policies are to be strictly construed, that these laws exist, and I guess most importantly, producers need to pay attention because small mistakes can cost money. Again, the basic provisions of crop insurance, they're codified as federal regulation. And why do I bring this out at this meeting? I want everybody to know that because the basic provisions are in the Code of Federal Regulations, they are to be strictly construed. That means they're applied the way they're written, whether or not they're fair, whether or not they're unfair. And way back in the 1950s, there was a case in front of the Supreme Court that talked about how crop insurance regulations should be given the strict effect of federal law. So if anybody tells you, this is the way we do it, if an adjuster tells a producer, we're just going to do it this way, and the agent says, that really isn't the way it works, that doesn't matter. Because the regulations, the basic provisions, are federal law. Crop insurance disputes. What's all the argument about? Crop insurance is so complex that you can't really summarize where a dispute can arise. What I can do is tell you that from my experience, there have been certain areas where I keep getting phone calls. There are always problems. And I'll say that many denied claims result from lack of knowledge. Lack of knowledge on the part of producers, as well as insurance companies and RMA. Adjusters, for example, we jockey adjusters in this country, all across the country, to points of need. Some of these adjusters don't really know that much about the crop losses that they're adjusting. I always tell the story about some adjusters that went out to Virginia to do a pepper loss, and they were out there trying to adjust a pepper loss, but they were in the potato field. And that didn't work out too well, and the crop insurance agent called me and said, we got a problem, we're going to need to hire you. I had another situation in Louisiana where RMA was doing a good farming practices evaluation. Well, the county extension agent called me. I was talking to him later about a different issue. And he said, well, the RMA official came down to basically look at this cotton production practice and see if it was a good farming practice. And he came by my office and he asked me, what is a cotton bowl and what does that look like? That is a major problem, because crop insurance is supposed to be our risk management tool, but sometimes you have people that don't know what they're doing, and it costs producers money. The crop insurance agent. At one time, like I said earlier, insurance companies had some responsibility for their actions of their agents. That's not the case anymore. Producers lean heavily on crop insurance agents, and we've got some excellent crop insurance agents in the South where I practice primarily. But the company's not liable. RMA is not liable. The agent represents you, and any errors or misrepresentations of the agent will not fall back on the company. I put up there that it's a legal fiction. It's not truly what a lawyer would consider a legal fiction, but I want to make the point that the crop insurance companies have insulated themselves from this liability. And how do they do it? My friend Scott Fancher from Harrison, Arkansas, case originated out of Louisiana, Laux v. Great American Insurance Company. He sued Great American Insurance Company on behalf of some farmers and won. The insurance company appealed to the Federal Court of Appeals. And the Federal Court of Appeals affirmed and said, these companies contract with the agents, and if they're giving bad information to the agents, the company should be responsible if the farmers' claims aren't paid. Well, it was a big victory. And then the rules changed. How did the rules change? Well, the federal regulations changed. The federal regulations that make up the policy changed. So, like I said earlier, the crop insurance lobby may have been responsible for that. They may not have been. I wasn't there. But I can promise you it wasn't lawyers like me that have the interest of producers at heart that changed federal law to relieve crop insurance companies of liability on the part of agents that sell their insurance. Where do disputes come? Most of my work is denied claims. Here lately, I've done some more overpayment work. Overpayment situations usually come in the form of delinquent debt cases where an insurance company says, you were overpaid back in 99, we want our money back now, we want it within 30 days. And the producer usually says, I don't have the money. I had a crop insurance claim, I needed it to pay my banker, so the money's not here anymore. Sometimes I'll contest that they owe any money. And ineligibility determinations are very important now. Why are good claims denied? Good farming practices determinations, determinations by insurance companies and RMA that you did not use good farming practices. Documentation is often the basis of claim denial. That's a really important point, because what documentation is required of a producer? Because there's really not an answer to that question. I've seen insurance companies request extensive amounts of documentation that no producer I've ever seen would have kept or recorded. I've seen producers submit records of pesticide applications and purchases that the insurance company deemed not sufficient because it did not break out the different pesticides for the different crops on that operations. None of that is included in the policy, but I make this point to say that if you get a request for documentation and you're a producer, you better follow up in writing and show that you're working with the company. Timeliness of a claim is often, that's a normal problem. People get delayed for whatever purposes in life. The timelines will be strictly construed most of the time. You have to put your claims in a timely fashion. Prevented planting will always be a problem. I see a fair amount of prevented planting cases from around the country where the crop insurance company basically says you could have planted and you didn't plant. And weather conditions are becoming more, they're becoming argued more by the insurance companies. And the issue often is did it rain? With our computer imaging and computer modeling of weather patterns and weather records now, oftentimes the crop insurance company will have something to say, well, it looks like you had average rainfall here, and the producer says, no, I didn't get the rain. The crop insurance company says, well, yes, you did, and whatever your loss was a result of, it's not insurable. That's a basic dispute, and it usually just comes down to word of mouth or any records the producer keeps. Technical problems that cost producers money, acreage reporting, timely notice, RMA involvement. So I'll briefly hit good farming practices now and make the point that coverage does not extend to the failure of a producer to follow good farming practices. The problem is production practices vary significantly from area to area. Take peanuts, for example. I've seen some peanuts eaten here today. If you're in Georgia, I think that it's pretty well accepted that you need to have a strict rotation requirement on your peanuts. If you go down into Florida, in mid-Florida, there's acreage that's been in continuous peanut production for 20-some-odd years, and it hasn't apparently affected yields. So what's a good farming practice in one state may not be in another, and that's where the disagreement arises. Another problem, and this hasn't been addressed adequately in my mind, does the requirement to follow good farming practices, does that require you to put money, to continue to dump money into a failed crop? For example, you didn't get a good stand, huge drought loss early in the planting season, do you have to keep applying fungicide? Do you have to apply herbicide at the rate you would if you had a good crop going? I don't think that question is answered, and I think it's a problem, and I think it will continue to be a problem. Here's another interesting point on good farming practices. Your insurance company can decide that you don't have an insurable loss as a producer because you didn't follow good farming practices, but the insurance company suffers no liability for that determination. The producer has no recourse against the insurance company. Now, is that fair? Do y'all think that's fair? Well, I would agree with you. So if my claim is denied and my lender's breathing down my neck and I want to get some resolution, go after the insurance company, I can't. I have to go to RMA. I have to ask RMA for determination that I did or did not follow good farming practice. Well, I think we already pointed out that RMA is going to be reinsuring this loss anyway, and if it's a big claim, there may be some hesitancy to do that. I don't know. I don't know if RMA has any hesitancy to do anything like that, but it seems to me there's a possible conflict of interest. And after you go to RMA, if RMA agrees that you did not follow good farming practice, whatever that is, you have to sue RMA in federal court. So your recourse against the insurance company for denying your claim is to haul the United States federal government into a federal court. Having litigated with federal government, I'm going to say that their resources are greater than yours. We may have some pretty wealthy people in the room, but they can try you with their resources. And it's hard to litigate against the government, and you won't get your attorney's fees back. So a lot of times when I see a crop insurance case, people ask me, how's it going to go? I say, you'll never be made whole. You'll never come out the way you would have come out if they just paid your claim, because you're going to have to pay me, you're going to pay somebody else, and it's going to be expensive if you have to litigate against the federal government. That leads to another problem we've got, is there is no adequate way for a producer to challenge the denial of a small claim. If you have a small crop insurance claim, it doesn't pay to challenge the company because you can't take it to court. I put the question mark on whether or not this is a good standard to use to ask RMA for its determination of what farming practices are good farming practices. There's too much variation in my mind across the country. Acreage reporting, if I could only tell you the amount of money that's been lost because acreage reports weren't done properly, you wouldn't believe it. And it's not the crop insurance agent's responsibility, so this is something that falls on the producers. The producers aren't doing this right. The producers aren't paying enough attention to their acreage reporting responsibilities. And I'll go down to the bottom on this slide. New producers don't ever seem to make it a priority to complete their intended acreage reports. The agents usually do that for them. That's in the last year, especially if there's any prevented planting claims. That's been devastating to a lot of young farmers that I've talked to. And frankly, that's their responsibility to fill out their insurance, their intended acreage report. The devil's in the details in federal crop insurance. That's the best way I can say it. You know, like a lot of other programs, other farm programs we've had in the past, and they're complex, but never has so much responsibility been placed on the program benefit recipient. And there's an immense amount of paperwork involved in crop insurance, an immense amount of regulations involved in crop insurance, and nobody knows them all, frankly. We're not heading in a good direction when our program is so complicated that even the companies can't work it and the agents are confused. I'll say briefly that in the event of a loss, producers should always be aware that it's completely their responsibility to notify the agent. And I tell all my clients to do it in writing, but most of them won't do it. Put any correspondence with the crop insurance company in writing. You choose not to do so at your own detriment. Representative samples, read your crop specific provisions. You can get a claim denied just for not leaving proper representative samples on yield damage claims. This is interesting to me. Crop preservation with yield damage, the insurance provider must give consent to obtain or to destroy a crop. I would ask that be in writing. And oftentimes the agents relay the information. It leaves a lot of uncertainty in my mind. I put this note in here to make the point that the standard reinsurance agreement between the crop insurance companies and RMA expressly prohibit the agent from providing consent to destroy a crop. Well, this is happening anyway. And the policy between the insurance company and the insured producer does not forbid that. But we've got agents that are telling people, just go ahead, we got the adjusters came by, you can go ahead and destroy your crop, you can plant wheat, you can do whatever you want to do. That's not the way it should work. It's the way it is working. And it's not a problem as long as you got a small claim. As long as you got a claim that doesn't raise anybody's eyebrows. And that's why it keeps happening. But once you have a large claim, when you have a claim over $500,000, and you have a claim, when you have a seven-figure claim, and these happen, a lot of these happen, more than people realize, you're going to raise some eyebrows at headquarters. You're going to raise some eyebrows in the suburb of Kansas City with somebody who's doing the paperwork. And they're going to say, well, so-and-so's got a seven-figure claim. We need to go through this with a fine-tooth comb, and it happens. Not only does the company watch, but RMA watches. These are the basic reporting requirements. I'm sure most of y'all are familiar with those if you deal with reporting at all. Where I see people miss the reporting most often is revenue coverage policies, where you don't get the notice of claim in time. That's the most common area. Sometimes it's impossible. Sometimes the crop's still in the field. And there's been some cases litigated where the farmers have prevailed on revenue policies because they didn't have the crop in yet. I'll hit my documentation point one more time and I'll move on. You have to retain records and provide them upon request. The policy has a specific provision that says you will cooperate in the adjustment of your claim. That means if they send you a request for information, you have to respond. I had a client that had a very large claim, and he provided all the documents he had to the adjuster when the adjuster came out. A large claim review, went through all that process. And then, 7 or 8 months out, he's still waiting to hear back on a decision on his claim. He gets a letter from the insurance company basically demanding a four-page list of documentation. So he calls up the national claims manager for the company. He calls up the claims manager and says, I can't get this to you within the time allotted. Would you please let me have a little bit more time? My client's position is that he was given verbal assurance that he could have an extra couple of weeks. Well, 3 days after the original time frame passed, he gets a denial letter. And his banker worked with him, and he was able to keep farming and still farming today. But that case is still in litigation. What happened is the company applied a deadline that's not found in the policy. Can they do that? Well, the policy's got some pretty broad language in there that says you have to cooperate. They could make the argument because he didn't document his conversation with the claims manager. They can make the argument that he didn't cooperate. He didn't call. It's just a swearing match then. Producers don't need to find themselves in that situation. So that's why you document communication and you provide all requested documentation in your possession. And if you don't have any documentation, what you need to do is sit down with a pen and paper and write out a description of your production practices. Provide something. Preventive planning. I tell people that this problem will not go away. Preventive planning is probably the most likely claims that you put in to be denied. We had a lot of preventive planning claims in Arkansas last spring, and I got a lot of calls from clients saying, should I put in my preventive planning claim? What should I do? Should I try to replant? The answer is not always so clear, because weather patterns differ. As farmers, producers know, weather patterns differ a lot in very close proximity. So to have a claim, you must have a cause of loss experienced in the area that prevents other producers from planting. Herein lies the problem. How many other producers? It's not clear. And if you don't have but 2 or 3 other producers in your area that didn't plant, you're probably going to be staring down the barrel of a claim denial. But I have successfully litigated on behalf of farmers who had their claims denied, and we were successful when we could just point out to a buddy, basically, somebody else that could say, you know, I couldn't plant either. Do you have to plant? I tell people two words to think about: area and similar characteristics. You need another person in your area that farms land similar to yours that puts in a claim. If you can't come up with that, if you don't have somebody like that, then don't put in a preventive planting claim. To complicate the matter further, RMA has not really defined these terms. Area doesn't mean somebody right next to you. Multiple interpretations of area. And area is defined by the cause of loss. So technically, if it rains on an adjacent farm and doesn't rain on your insured farm, you can still qualify for preventive planting. And I know the insurance company lawyers about lost their minds when RMA came out with a decision that even if it's that drought can be a reason to put in a preventive planting claim, even if it's dry enough to plant, and other producers in your area plant, you can still recover a preventive planting claim. I would say that just confused the issue more, because RMA recognized that drought presents a scenario where planting may not be a good farming practice. Well, I would say that in that situation, we've opened the door to a whole lot of other situations where planting might not be the best thing to do right now. Maybe it's too cold. I don't know. It just throws the whole thing into a gray area, I would say. Weather data, I always tell clients, get weather data. RMA is in the weather records keeping business now, if everybody's aware of that. I think they work with the Center for Agribusiness Excellence at Tarleton State. And they give these weather models where you can put in the coordinates of your farm and it shows how much it rained there. It's an estimate. And RMA, when they get involved in claims, is now using that to deny claims. And I don't know how we're going to stop this, but just because their computer program says it rained on that farm does not mean it rained on that farm. I think common sense would dictate that, but we are litigating this issue now. That's a situation we're dealing with. Another point I'll make that's been huge lately is eligibility determinations. We've found ourselves, well, I'll start off like this. Years ago, we had a rule in this country in the crop insurance program that if an insurance company came to you and said, you owe me money, and you said, no, I don't, then you wouldn't be declared ineligible for crop insurance. As long as the dispute was ongoing, until it was resolved, RMA just stood back and said, well, that's y'all's fight. We're not going to declare the participant ineligible for crop insurance. Well, that's not the rule anymore. That's not the rule. So if you don't think you owe some money, you still have to pay it. Or you have to enter into a payment agreement to keep yourself from being placed on the ineligible tracking system. That seems like a due process violation if I've ever seen one. Maybe I've never seen one, but it's certainly inequitable. It's inequitable that producers that don't think they're ineligible have to work out a payment plan, basically saying we owe you a debt, before they have any recourse to appeal. The appeal and the appeal process goes on through the USDA National Appeals Division, which is, you know, is an independent arm of USDA that handles all their program appeals. But it seems like that the National Appeals Division sees their role in this process as just making sure that RMA follows their regulations instead of whether they're right or wrong. Well, we need a way of figuring out if they're right or wrong, because we don't need farmers in this country declared ineligible for crop insurance, which is supposed to be our safety net, with no opportunity to appeal whether or not they even owed the money in the first place. And here's the real kicker. The real kicker is that you can have a crop insurance policy in place, and then you get a letter in the mail saying, well, you were overpaid 6 years ago and we want $65,000 back from you within 30 days or you're ineligible. You don't have the money, you don't work out the payment plan, whatever, you forget, you didn't get the letter, you were drunk, whatever the reason is, within 30 days, they can put you on the ineligible tracking system and you no longer have coverage. You just lost coverage for this federal farm safety net, and you don't even have a real appeal process. And you cannot regain coverage under the terms of the regulations until after the next sales closing date. You have to put in a new, even if you do work out a payment agreement, you have to wait till the next sales closing date to get coverage. Now, I've seen some situations where the insurance companies, I think, tried to do the right thing and basically didn't make an issue about whether or not they should have put in another application. But that just creates a new problem, because when RMA comes in and audits you 3 years down the road, they're going to see that you got paid some money you shouldn't have gotten. They're going to want it back again. You're just deferring the problem, because RMA and the companies will come in after the fact and they'll request overpayments. I've seen it done time and time again, and I will continue to see it done. And most of the time, it's not a lot of money, and it's not worth a producer. I saw a lot of them in the past year because the new producer audits that went through. I had a lot of calls where they said, well, they say I owe them $5,000 or $9,000. It's often not worth their money to contest and fight the federal government on that amount of claim. But when it comes to a six-figure amount that they want back, it's worth your money to fight it. And the point should be made that this is extremely harsh. Producers should not have to fight to remain eligible for a federal program that their taxpayers' dollars are helping to fund. And there should be some kind of a resolution. If you contest the debt, in my opinion, they shouldn't put you on the tracking system until you've had some kind of an appeal process. I don't think that's unreasonable. That used to be the rule. The rule changed. Why did the rule change? I think that's something that people involved in crop insurance need to ask, because I'm starting to see a pattern here. At one point in time, not that long ago, producers could go in to their county courthouse and fight a claim. That's not the process anymore. At one point in time, 10 years ago, companies were liable if their agents misled you and led to a denied claim. That's not the rule anymore. At one point in time, if you disputed that you owed a debt, you weren't declared ineligible for crop insurance. That's not the rule now. So we're heading in a direction that I don't think is smart for producers. But then again, I'm biased, and of course the insurance companies want their money. Early planting dates. A couple of years ago, this came up with corn in Arkansas. People thought that they weren't really risking too much by planting before the early planting dates, just the replant payment. But the problem is, the insurance company started reviewing when they planted early and started saying that, you know, that might not be a good farming practice. So that's something I tell people to keep an eye on. That wasn't a problem last year because we didn't get the corn planted we wanted to plant in the Mid-South. Now I'm going to wrap up with an overview of how dispute resolution actually works. How do you challenge a decision by an AIP or RMA that negatively impacts a farm operation? It depends on whose decision you challenge. That's how simple it is. The company, generally you have to go to arbitration. Disagreements with RMA, generally have to go to an administrative appeals process. And the National Appeals Division of USDA handles quite a few of those. Maybe, just maybe, after you spend a couple years fighting it, you can get into federal district court and get some review of the agency action. At that point, the review is not, it's simply a review of whether or not the decision was arbitrary, and it's not whether they were right or wrong, so it's limited review. Let's talk about arbitration for a minute. Mandatory arbitration with an approved insurance provider. I think it's fair to say that the insurance companies think arbitration is cheaper for them than going into courtrooms. And it probably is for them because, you know, their tall building lawyers probably charge them a lot of money to litigate cases. It's not cheaper for my clients. Number one, you have to pay an arbitrator or a panel of arbitrators. You know, $250, $300 an hour in the Mississippi Delta is not unusual. You don't have to pay a judge to hear a case. I'll make that point to you. You think arbitration is cheaper, think again. I believe that RMA became concerned that the arbitration results were not as they would like. And I was told by an official at RMA that after arbitrating for a few years, they got tired of paying some claims that they didn't think were valid. So they removed, after removing access to the court system, now access to an arbitration is limited as well. You can't argue a good farming practices determination in arbitration. You have to go to RMA. And if you look at the note at the bottom of this slide, now the rule is that crop insurance arbitrators don't even have the power to interpret the meaning of a policy provision. Now, does that make any sense? How do you go? It makes no sense at all, and this is being litigated in federal courts right now. I've got one case, Davis v. Producers Agriculture Insurance Company, where it's being litigated. We'll be in front of the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals next week on that case. If you have a dispute over the meaning of a policy provision, which seems to be extremely broad to me, you have to go to RMA and ask for a final agency determination and get their determination of what the policy means. So now, not only have we limited the access to courts, we've limited the access to an independent arbitrator, and the agency's interpretation of the policy is binding on the arbitrator per the terms of federal regulation. Is there any appeal from arbitration? Very slim. Four grounds for appeal. You have to allege corruption, fraud, partiality, misconduct, or allege that the arbitrator exceeded the powers provided by the policy. Very rarely will an arbitration award be overturned. It's pretty much a dispute resolution means without an appeal process. RMA, when do they get involved? I would say large claim reviews, when AIP seeks guidance, and when there's a policy dispute or a request for a final agency determination to guide the arbitration. If there's a large claim, the insurance company is required by the standard reinsurance agreement to notify RMA and allow them to participate in the adjustment of the producer's claim. What does this mean for you? In my eyes, it means that you get a higher level of scrutiny than anybody else that farms in your area. Because you had the big claim, you not only have to go through the insurance company's adjusters, you get some people from RMA to come down and visit with. And I wonder about the equity in that as well. Just because my claim, I farmed more, that I have to deal with RMA and my neighbors don't. I mean, I don't know if it's fair, but I will point at the bottom, because I know I sound biased often, that RMA can make a pretty good argument that they need to have uniformity in application across the country in all these programs. My question becomes, I'm not sure how uniform it is if we only pick out the big farmers and the big claims. Again, the test is arbitrary and capricious. If you lose an administrative review and you do get into federal court, you have the burden then to show that they were completely arbitrary and capricious. This is different than wrong. They don't have a new review of the facts. So here's my slide on what I think is inadequate. If you appeal to RMA, there's really no recourse if they take a lot of time. You know, the lender doesn't really understand the time requirement, why it's taking so long to resolve this problem. Many believe there's no independent review. And here's some examples of recent cases where federal courts have found that RMA action has been arbitrary and capricious. Mountain Valley Farms and Lumber Products. This is one of those cases, how do I prove it rained? RMA decided good farming practices weren't used just by walking around out there, basically. Okay. And with that, I'm going to wrap it up. My closing slide will be, you know, what do producers need? I spend a lot of time talking and working with producers. What do they need in the dispute resolution process? I would say a cost-effective resolution method for small claims, RMA out of the adjustment process, and reformation of the ineligible tracking system. And with that, I'll say thank you for the opportunity. I appreciate y'all's attention. And if y'all have any questions, give me a shout.
Thanks, Grant. Appreciate it.